Grand Rapids, Itasca Paper Company, took on a most unexpected role in the 1920s. Recall that a kind of war existed between the manufacturers of newsprint and the newspaper users of the product. The manufacturers wanted, of course, to make a profit. The newspaper publisher owners argued that the cost of newsprint should be mandated by the government to stay low to keep newspapers, as they like to say, they were the voice of democracy, low in cost and thus widely circulated. The newspapers used their influence and thereby their powerful voice to promote their cause, that resulting in such as the government decision to allow Canadian newsprint to be imported without tariff and thereby selling newsprint at a low price and putting pressure on the American producers to further lower their prices and profits. Well, C.K. Blandin, as owner and publisher of the St. Paul newspapers, had fully supported in the pages of his papers the publisher cause and caused for price controls to keep newsprint prices low. I didn't mention when we were discussing his purchase of the Itasca Paper Company in 1916 a clause that quite amused the Kaukauna owners as they reached agreement on purchase terms. Blandin's clause allowed him to back out of the purchase if manufacturers of pulp refused to sell that commodity needed to make paper in Grand Rapids because of the low river problems. In other words, Blandin feared that as he now turned to the newsprint business, pulp producers, remembering his position supporting low prices for their product, would take their revenge and not sell to him, and thus make paper production impossible in Grand Rapids. The Kaukauna owners thought Blandin's insistence on the close was not only amusing, but was also on the paranoid side, and they were sure there'd be no blockage to his purchases, and therefore they did not object to the clause. And indeed, manufacturers hungry for profits never did refuse Blandin's orders for pulp. In the 1920s, the newspaper publishers were still carrying their war on the newsprint manufacturing profits on, and now Blandin found himself on the other side of the conflict. Even though he still owned and published the St. Paul papers, he now was very much in tune with the reasons put forward by the newsprint industry, and his views took on national prominence in the papermaking industry as he became one of their major supporters. What a reversal. And we can also take note that, importantly for Grand Rapids, this was a demonstration that Blandin was becoming ever more involved with and liking his paper-making venture. Well, let's take a look at what he has to say in this matter. The 1920s were generally not prosperous for the manufacturers of newsprint. The market of the World War I years had ended. The ensuing recession, coupled with overproduction both in the United States and Canada, resulted in lower market prices for newsprint, while the cost of raw material and labor increased. Influential newspaper publishers were quick to champion the cause of democracy and continued to make every effort to keep the price of newsprint and the resulting cost of newspapers low. Blandin, using Grand Rapids paper primarily for his own newspapers, was initially not as affected by declining prices as were the manufacturers who were solely dependent upon the open market. As one of the very few newspaper publishers in the business of manufacturing newsprint, Charles Blandin could regard the paper companies with sympathy, and his attitude was quite different than that of his publisher colleagues. In a sometimes heated exchange of correspondence with E.P. Adler, Adler was the chairman of the Newsprint Paper Committee of the American Newspaper Publishers Association, and he was also the publisher of the Davenport, Iowa Times. Blandin defended the interests of the newsprint producers. Adler advocated a very low set price for newsprint, appealing to all newsprint users for support. Blandin wrote Adler that such a low price would force manufacturers to sell their paper at a loss. Such prices, he said, would drive producers out of business or force them to make an inferior grade of paper or permit their plants to deteriorate so that later on costs would again be excessive. Blendon concluded, "Instead of trying to buy newsprint paper below cost, it strikes me that it would be much better and broader policy if publishers were willing to pay the manufacturers a fair price, giving them a chance to make a just profit on what they produce and then expect in return a proper service." Adler angrily replied, accusing Blendon of forwarding copies of his letter to trade publications before Adler had had opportunity to respond. Adler stated that he simply had been striving for as low a price for newsprint as possible and had no apologies to make for it. Blendon said that he still wanted an answer to a simple question. Did Adler want manufacturers to sell newsprint for less than the cost of production? If so, Blendon reiterated, in the long run, such a course of action would be poor business for publishers as well as for producers. Adler vehemently responded, "For 2 or 3 years, paper manufacturers have made enormous profits. It was simply a plain case of getting all the traffic would bear. Now that the shoe is on the other foot, the manufacturers whine and talk about cost of production." He agreed that we should not expect paper to be sold to us below the cost of production, but the time for manufacturers to discuss this with publishers was during 1919 and 20, when the cost of production was not considered. Why, he asked, should newspaper publishers be good Samaritans now? Now, Blendon responded again by stating he was only seeking a fair price for newsprint. He detailed the costs of producing it, attempting to blunt Adler's accusations about former high prices. He believed that in most instances, this profit went back into plants and into payment of government income taxes. In any event, Blendon explained, the average profits over this period were held down by greatly increased labor expenses. Adler continued the debate, but he did adopt a more conciliatory tone. He wrote that he would like to see figures supporting Blendon's contention that the current price of newsprint was too low to allow the manufacturer a profit. Adler also stated that he was glad to hear from you and that he would be receptive to receiving any constructive criticism at any time. He had nothing, he said, at stake excepting to endeavor to serve the publishers of our association in the best manner that I can. So Blendon compiled a breakdown of the cost of manufacturing paper in Grand Rapids and sent the information to Adler. On the basis of the figures, Blendon concluded that the price suggested by Adler was indeed too low to provide manufacturers with any profit. Adler quickly countered by pointing out that the cost of making paper in a small mill in northern Minnesota was not necessarily indicative of that in large, modern, and efficient mills elsewhere. Blendon quickly replied that the Itasca Paper Company was modern, and in some respects, he said, were able to make paper at less cost than some of the other and larger mills. The correspondence between the two men received considerable publicity in paper trade journals, in addition to being printed and distributed in pamphlet form by the International Paper Company. That's that huge paper company in the East. And certainly interesting that they would reprint what was being sent from the Itasca Paper Company in Grand Rapids. Although Blendon's defense of the newsprint industry neither stemmed the tide of pressures brought to bear by publishers nor reversed the downward trend of prices, it did mark his growing interest in the making of paper. Blendon's involvement with national causes in newsprint production continued, and we will be coming back to this story again.